Again, discussing the Rosh, who was one of the Gedolei Poskim Rishonim. Again, as I mentioned many times, the Rosh was born in Germany. Actually, was a descendant also of Rabbeinu Gershom Aragoila. Rabbeinu Gershom Aragoila, who there is purported to be that there is a zecher for a kaver in Mainz to this day. Very few kiver Rishonim that to this day that we could identify going so back. For example, no one knows where the cave of Rashi is. You can imagine Rashi. We don't know where it is. All that we know is that Rashi was nipped in France, and there is supposedly where there
used to be the old cemetery, which things have been since then been changed very, very much, and certainly there's no designation for any particular place where one would be able to say this is the cave of Rashi. So one would imagine, just in a very general way, overlooking a plot of land, an extensive plot of land, that somewhere over here would be the cave of Rashi. What we do know is, for example, the cave of the Rambam, which, although this is also contested, this is accepted in the United States. You know, the cave of the Rambam is in Tveria. Many people have been there. Yet there are some opinions that say it's not so. But as it has been accepted by most opinions, that the Rambam's cave is in Tveria. Again, what is clearly identified without exception is the Rebbe of the Rosh, is the Maram Rottenberg, which we mentioned a number of times. The cave of Maram Rottenberg is in Worms. Okay? He was nefted in 1293. And that is something that is visited by hundreds and hundreds of people from all over, continuously on a yearly basis, going to daven there. And the Maram Rottenberg, one of the greatest Rishonim of all time, and also one of the Balei HaTosfos. The Rosh was a Talmud of Maram Rottenberg together with the Mordechai. The Mordechai, and it was in the year 1306, that after many Yidden were driven out of Germany, and tens of thousands of Jews were killed that particular time, which unfortunately is not unusual in our history, is that was one of the reasons that prompted the Rosh to leave Germany and to go up to France. And as we mentioned, that when he goes up to France, the first meeting that he was in Barcelona, that was with the Rajba. And the Rajba and the Rosh were very familiar with one another due to correspondence. The Rajba was in Spain, and the Rosh from Germany, that he used to write. And he spent about something like a week or 8 days in the house of the Rajba. And the Rajba was the one that recommended the Rosh that he should be accepted as the Rav in the Rosh Yeshiva of Toledo, which again, in Loshna Rishayna, if you look in the Rosh, it's called, going back hundreds of years, it's called Tulatila. This is the way it's referred to. Matter of fact, the Balaturim, in his Sefer HaTur, right, the Torah many times refers to countless and countless of takonis and various halachis regarding, he says, Toledo, and refers to it as Tulatila. That is the way that it was known. And the Rosh becomes actually the Mamalamokin, the successor to Rabbeinu Yoine. Rabbeinu Yoine was also in Toledo, and Rabbeinu Yoine was the Rosh Yeshiva there as well. And Rabbeinu Yoine's plan was not to stay in Toledo. Rabbeinu Yoine's plan was to leave Gerona and to go up to Eretz Yisrael. And the reason why he wanted to go up to Eretz Yisrael is, it is said, because he wanted to ask Mechila from the Rambam. He's one of the fiercest opponents against the Rambam, as many others were, because of the Rambam's various opinions on philosophy and so on and so forth. But later on he reconsidered, and Rabbeinu Yoine therefore felt what he has to do is nothing less than actually to make that long distance and to go to the cave of the Rambam and to ask Mechila. So on the way, leaving Gerona, which is not far from Barcelona, going down to Toledo, he stays there, and the Jewish community does not let him leave. So his cheshbon was he's going to stay there for a little while, and ultimately he's going to take the next boat, you know, to Eretz Yisrael. But unfortunately, he was nifter right there in Toledo, and as a successor to Rabbeinu Yoine, so the Rosh becomes. And once the Rosh establishes a yeshiva with his particular style of learning, it becomes very, very famous from all over. And Talmidim came literally from all over. We said even as far as from Russia in those days. You have to realize we're talking about in the 1300s. Talmidim came, and he was recognized as a Godel HaDor, and his psokim, you know, his halachic decisions were something that was really accepted and certainly respected. The Rosh is known also as an Ish Kodesh, a tremendous Rishonim. We're talking about Rishonim, all of the Rishonim were that way. And he also, as we said, signed together with the Rajab at the particular time. He saw that philosophy was really becoming something that infiltrates and takes the place of real Jewish learning. So there was sort of like a cherem or a ban against studying philosophy before the age of 25, except you said medicine, we mentioned already, was excluded. That was okay. But otherwise, studying that, and Rosh also signed on that. Could I to mention, you know, some of the children of the Rosh, which is not known at all. And all of them were Gedolei Torah. Imagine children of the Rosh, each one. And so you have, by the way, the Bechor, the oldest son of the Rosh, his name was Rabbi Yechiel. And if you remember, in the very first shiur that we started, in the Hakdomah, we mentioned that the Rosh's father was Yechiel. Matter of fact, the Rosh is Rabbeinu Osher ben Yechiel. So the Rosh named his oldest son, he named him his Bechor, he named him Yechiel. And this is Rabbi Yechiel, was a big Talmud Chochom, although we don't have too much, in writing from this Rabbi Yechiel. But to have an idea who Rabbi Yechiel was, because his younger brother, that was the Balaturim, Rabbeinu Yaakov Balaturim, which is world famous, the Balaturim, mentions his brother many, many times. In terms of Divrei Torah, in Halacha, and so on. And he mentions them in the Turim, either in the Chalokim of Arachayim, you know, Yerideya, Evan Ezer, Choshe Mishpat. So in the Dalet Turim, in the four volumes of the Tur, the Balaturim, Rabbeinu Yaakov was his name, Rabbeinu Yaakov Balaturim. He's known the Balaturim because he wrote this Sefer, the Tur. So he mentions his brother quite a number of times. The only thing is that Rabbi Yechiel died during the lifetime of his father. So the Rosh lost the son during his lifetime. He had another son. His son was known, extreme tzaddik, was known as Rav Shloime Chosid, a son of the Rosh. Not very well known. Well, he died in his youth, so the Rosh lost a second son. He died young. He loses his son Rabbi Yechiel in his lifetime. He loses his son Rabbi Shmuel, Rav Shloime. And the Rabbi Yanke Balaturim, as we know, basically is the one who left the legacy of Piske Halacha. What the Balaturim did was to compile, to bring together all the teachings of both of Germany and in Spain. So bringing the Ashkenaz and the Sfarad, bringing all together the Sfarad Shimon Hagim and also the Ashkenaz Shimon Hagim. There's not anything that he left out. And basically in Halacha, when it came down to practice, he followed his father's, usually he followed his father's Mahalach this way. So just interesting to mention that one cannot imagine, you know, a person of such great stature that would not have been supported more by the Jewish community in the sense that he was not a poor man, he was extremely poor, someone who lived in abject poverty. Just give an indication how poor the Balaturim was. You can't imagine to have such a good lador, you know, to live, you know, in such poverty. He writes as follows in Hilchi Shabbos. He says, many, many times he writes, Nososi, he says, V'nosati bedover lifnei adoini ovi zechoin l'brocha. Many times he says, I pose the following question, he says to my father. What was the question? Kemoini hayoim, somebody like myself, he says. Kemoini hayoim, somebody like myself. Sheyeshli ma'at mishli, I have very little of my own. V'zeloi maspikli, and what I have is not enough to sustain myself. I have to come on to others, sort of like to take a handout. It's an amazing thing. So what was the question? Because there is a Gemara that says that regarding Shabbos, you know, Shabbos, we try to honor the Shabbos as much as possible, and therefore people buy for Shabbos, right, much more than during the week. I mean, hopefully the Shabbos is more than during the week. And we don't spare when it comes to Shabbos, right? So you have all the extra food, all the delicacies. Shabbos, Oinik Shabbos, it's a big mitzvah. But then there's a Gemara that says, but if a person's poor cannot afford it, then make a simple Shabbos rather than to stick out your hand and have to beg. So the Gemara says, Asei Shabbat Chochoil, rather make your Shabbos, wait, weekday-ish, Narus, keep your Shabbos simple, right? And you shouldn't have to come on to others. And the Baal Tum says, I asked my father if I am also included in that category of having to make a very, very simple Shabbos because I can't afford it. Couldn't afford to make Shabbos. And what did Rosh answer? What did the father say? Well, Hashivani Dover Borer, my father did not want to answer me, a clear answer. And some say because the father did not want to put a stamp that his son is such a money, such a poor man. He said, as if not to acknowledge it, you know, as if to say, you know what, I'm not going to be maskim, and hopefully that your mazel will change and turn around. He had another son, the Rosh, his name was Rabbi Yochum. He had a son, Rabbi Moshe, had a son, Rabbi Shimon. And next to the Balaturim, the most famous one was Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda ben Rosh. And we have Chuvis from Rabbi Yehuda ben Rosh, and when the Rosh is Nifter, who succeeds the Rosh? Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda ben Arosh, he's the one who succeeds Rosh in Toledo. And it's not clear from the point of history why the Balaturim did not become the successor. Balaturim was really the most famous, right? Rabbi Yehuda was great as well, very great. But nevertheless, the Balaturim was the Balaturim, and it's not very clear. This is something that still that is being pondered. It's possible maybe he didn't want it. Maybe he refused it for some reason. He just didn't want to accept the responsibility of being a Mordasser. It's also possible. But it's just an interesting point that the Rosh's successor was not the Balaturim, was in fact was Rabbi Yehuda ben Arosh. Could I to mention what the Shittim HaKibetzis, Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi, writes the following words on the Rosh. Shittim HaKibetzis, you realize the Arizal also was a Talmud of the Baal Shittim HaKibetzis, and also learning by the Radbaz in Mitzrayim, Rabbeinu David ben Zimra. So the Shittim HaKibetzis writes the following. Shittim HaKibetzis, you know, is of course is one of the most choshev Sfarim who brings down all the different Mishoinim on various Masechtis. It's sort of like a sickle, like an encyclopedic work. It's not like today, you know, Baruch Hashem, you can go out and buy any sefer you want. So he bought the Shittim HaKibetzis, means it's a collection, it's a collection of all the different opinions. He had many manuscripts, and therefore he basically had it brought all together, you know, so people then were able to avail themselves from everything that he had collected. That's what's called Shittim HaKibetzis, which means the collection of various opinions. Therefore, when you learn a Gemara, you find out there's many different ways how to understand, right, a passage of Gemara, and he brings down the various Rishonim, like the Ramban said this way, right, and another Rishon said this way, and so on and so forth. He brings down the Rosh, he brings down all those, the Rajbas, people, you know, that any parish that was, and also from different Balatoises that we don't have today, we find in the Shittim HaKibetzis. Anyway, so regarding the Rosh, the Shittim HaKibetzis, whose name was Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi, writes as follows. He writes, Rabon Shel Golus HaChayil Hazeh. He was the Rebbe of the entire exile. The Rosh was the greatest of the diaspora, he says. He said, and he points out to go all the way from France, Sfarad, he says, and Spain, the Roiv HaGoyla, and most of the Goyla, most of the diaspora, Kibluhu L'Rav Aleihem, accepted him. Sometimes you have somebody who's really greater than everybody, but not everybody accepts him. Not everybody wants to accept him. But he said he was accepted by most all over the world, he says. And also Rabbi Yosef Karo, of course, the Mechaber de Shulchan Aruch in the Hagdome. Rabbi Yosef Karo in the Hagdome to the Sefer Beis Yosef. And he writes very clearly, he says, my Shulchan Aruch that I'm writing is based upon the three pillars. Shloisha Amudei Yisrael. These are the three pillars. He said these are the Rif and the Rambam, he says, and the Rosh. It was these opinions upon which I wrote the Shulchan Aruch. And as you mentioned, the usual way he followed was he took two out of the three. Because, you know, the three of them can argue. So if the Rambam and the Rif was against the Rosh, right, then we'd paskin like them. If the Rambam and the Rosh would be against the Rif, you'd paskin like them. And so on, whoever was the two, because you had three, so the odd number fell out. So a component, but this was the three that he based on. These are the three opinions that Rabbi Yosef Karo took seriously. And the Rosh was nifter in the year of 1327. And I mentioned one more nekuda before we go further. I have here a page of the Shal Tshuva HaRosh, you know, in terms of the various questions and answers that were asked by the Rosh. And remember, the Rosh, of course, again, was a combination of Ashkenaz and Sfarad. Because he lived so many years in Sfarad, and he loved him in Sfarad. I mean, and recognized his godless and his tremendous character, not looking down at anybody. Just the opposite. He's so humble that he was, but nevertheless, but he was very authoritative, which means that once he gave an opinion, it was very, very strong, and he enforced the opinions that he had. So here was a question, interesting, regarding a particular bird, you know, which is called, it's called Hachasido. Now, you know, there's a Hasido which is mentioned, one of the Oifis Temeim is mentioned in Parshas, you know, which talks about all the Oifis Temeim. But there was a bird, it was called Hasido, which was Loshen Chosid. And the question they asked him is, if you're allowed to eat that bird. So he writes like this, Kva Yishavticha al Shelosho, he says. He says, I already answered you once, he said. But I'm going to answer you now again the second time. I already answered you. And he says, please, da. He says, I want you to know, ki ba'artzeinu ubisforad ein oichlin, we don't eat a bird. Interesting thing. Because a bird, right, has certain signs to recognize that it's a kosher bird. Now, we, certainly Ashkenazim, based upon the Ramah, that we don't follow eating birds based upon recognizing signs unless we have a Messiah. It has to be a tradition. Which means that even though we find a stray bird that we have never seen before, and it appears to have these signs of a kosher bird, but you can never tell, because sometimes it's not very identifiable. And therefore, we don't eat a bird unless there's a tradition this was eaten. Therefore, there was a lot of problems to begin when the turkey was introduced. And there were still, there were many great people that did not eat turkey. I mean, even today there are some who don't eat turkey. Because the turkey was a bird, right, which did not have a tradition, only going back, you know, a few hundred years. And at that time, it didn't come back, going back years and years, there was no ancient tradition to that. But yet, the turkey was considered to have enough kosher science, not too far away from the chicken. It's larger. But in terms of the basic identifiable signs, the turkey was considered to be kosher, and it was accepted in most cases, as you see. So the Rosh says as follows. He says, we don't eat a bird here, he says, and in Spain, a bird hamekanen alabatim. In other words, here's an interesting sign of rejection. A sign to reject the bird is if it makes a nest by houses. Interesting thing. You see a bird that it makes a nest, says by houses, we don't eat it. He says, they say that this particular bird, it eats, it says, frogs. And he says, and they call it sugonya. But we call it chasido. He says, and as far as some places do eat it, he says, what can I do? He says, they eat it, let them eat it. He says, Uma nasel mekoimus shoichlan oisoi. Hey, Myoim Rucho, they'll tell you that it's a kosher bird, oif tohar, right? Because they say they have a Messiah, they say they have a tradition. Fine. So Avul Toiv Lachkar, he says, but even though they say they have a tradition, says the Rosh, but I'd be very skeptical and try to really search out to see how viable that tradition is. Sometimes say we have a tradition. Question is how strong really is that tradition? Who made up that tradition? That's what the Rosh says, Avul Toiv Lachkar. It would be a good thing to investigate Acher Kabbalosom, after their Kabbalah. Shema Odamechot Somach Al Chachmosoi. He says, could be there was one person who decided that it's kosher based on his Chochmah, that this is a kosher bird. And he was able to influence a group of people, so their children ate it, and then their children's children are eating, and so on and so forth. So the whole tradition really began on faulty foundations, says the Rosh. So therefore, when they say there's a tradition regarding it, he says, I check out that tradition. And then he goes on further and further. He says, many of the non-kosher birds, believe it or not, have three kosher signs. So it means, therefore, you can really have in front of you, he says, a non-kosher bird of the Oifis Temeim, he says. And Shiesh L'cholechod, he says, you can have Gimel Simon Tahara, and then you have some of them that have Beis Simon Tahara. Therefore, he says, Ein Lismoich al Oifis al Bedikri Simon Tahara. We do not rely on checking out Simonim signs. Because why? Because many non-kosher birds also have dual signs. They have signs of non-kosher, and they also have the kosher signs, and yet they are non-kosher birds. So it has to go by tradition, he says. If you have a tradition that this is a kosher bird, you eat it. If you don't have a tradition, you can't rely on your own wisdom to say, okay, I recognize, you know, based upon this and this, this is a kosher bird. But here's the thing. Veda, I want you to know. Ki ani lo hayisi oichel al pi mesoir shelahem. Even if they have a good tradition, he says, I wouldn't eat by their tradition. You know why? Look what he says. He says, "Ki ani marzik es ha-mesoyre shalonu." Our mesoyre, interesting, is that the mesoyre says of Ashkenaz. Listen to what Rosh says. "Ani marzik es ha-mesoyre shalonu v'kabolas aviseinu chach me-Ashkenaz." That this is a Torah that's Yerusha Elohim ma-visei me-moyse chorm. It goes all the way back to the Churban Beis HaMikdash. So he says, our tradition, he says, is so strong, and also the tradition, he says, Avisein, Rabbi Sein, but Sorfas in France, Yosef Mekabolas Bnei Yosef, it's interesting, more than the tradition of Spain. That's what the Rosh says. Our tradition, he says, is stronger. So therefore, let's say there would be a tradition in Spain to eat certain birds, he says, and if we didn't have the tradition, I wouldn't go by the tradition where I am now, because it says, my tradition, I believe, is stronger, and it goes back all the way, he says, to Yimoy Sachurim, and so on and so forth. So anyway, so this is the thing. So, but those that have a Kabbalah to eat a tradition, so fine, so they are eating it. So this is just another interesting thing, how the Rosh has played the two fields, you know, the Ashkenaz as well as the Sfarad. So let's go, boys, let's go take a look here in the Orchis Chaim of the Rosh. All right, we're still in the Yom Rishon, and we go to letter Zion and the Ches are together, interestingly enough. Zion and Ches are together. He put together two halachas. Zion and Ches, it's on page Zion, if you take a look. It's on Dav Zion. Okay, here in Dav Zion, Zion and Ches, the Rosh is as follows. The Rosh says that it's important that a person should be careful not, right, not to slip and not to violate, he says, pledges or vows. A neder, a person makes a vow, a person makes a pledge, you have to be very careful, it's very serious to default on a neder. If you make a promise, he says, so very careful. This is what the Rosh gives us, this very important teaching, because many, many different places in the Gemara where we find how serious it is. She is oy memich shel hanedorim, a person should be very careful. And also, umaynoyes habrius. Also be very careful, he says, not to cheat, he says, people. And oynoa has twofold meaning. Oynoa means overreaching, defrauding people. Hein b'momen, whether we're talking about momen, that's called oynoas momen. Oynoas momen means you're doing business. And you are defrauding people. For example, you're selling him an item that's not really worth the price that you are asking for it. Or sometimes the other way, sometimes it is that the seller is defrauded because he's selling something that he does not recognize its value. The buyer recognizes the value and he's ready to grab a metzia and to underpay, taking advantage of the particular ignorance of the seller. So you know, it can go both ways. Sometimes the moicher, right, can be defrauding, sometimes the buyer can be defrauding the seller. So the Rosh says, be careful from oynoa sabrius, from defrauding. Hein b'momen, hein b'dvorim. Oynoa s'dvorim means to be careful of the words, not to cause pain. Many times you say something, but you say outright, you know, something you say, talk about something, you criticize someone, or you say something which could embarrass him, could hurt him. You talk, or you speak about somebody's features, and you say to him, you know what, you have a big nose or something like that, I don't like the features of your face, or whatever it might be, or your clothing, whatever. But anything that could really hurt a person, says the Rosh, this is called oinoas, this is called oinoas dvorim. So you have oinoas momen, you have oinoas dvorim. Cheating someone by momen, or hurting one's feelings by using words. And also, umikinosom, umisinosom. And the Rosh says also, be careful not to arouse jealousy. Don't behave in a way that arouses the jealousy of your neighbors. In other words, live a way which is not outlandish, outstanding. Live in a way, right, which is not ostentatious. And also try to avoid to do things that will cause people to hate you. And so these are interesting things. So he mixes here a few things. He mixes in one, as we say, in one statement, basically, as we see, Zayin and Ches, he put together. He talks about Nedarim, be careful not to violate Nedarim, promises and pledges. And then he also talks about Oinoyas Abrius, either cheating people or hurting people with words, right? And preventing jealousy and preventing sin. So we take a look over here. Let's take a look in the bottom here in the beer from Rav Moshe Sternberg, Zayin Ches. Be careful, he says, be careful from, right, from becoming or bringing yourself in a situation where you're going to violate a neder. You're falling into the trap of violating a neder. But he says, in another place, he says, Mashtem makes a comment that, in my opinion, he says, it's not appropriate, you know, when you go up, you have an aliyah, and Mishu Beruch is made for you. Right? And then that's expected, you know, that you make some sort of a donation by the aliyah. Whether it's a donation, actually, you actually give an amount, or you say you're going to give a matona. So, he says, it's not appropriate, in my opinion, says Rav Moshe Sternberg, when they say, Babu she yitein matona lebeis haknesses, because that means that you have committed yourself to give. Now you have to give. Usually a person says, yitein matona, it means he's not giving anything many times. Remember when we opened the shul, this was like, I think it was like in 1975. So somebody walked in, and he had an aliyah, and Babu she yitein matona. And it happened to be Rav Mechoel Fuld, who was a cipher, if you remember, here. Olav HaSholem, and sure enough, a few days later, he comes in and he brings a beautiful mezuzah for the shul. He gave him a matona, Taki. He said, I'll give him a matona. And Taki came, he gave him a matona. Babi Shita matona. So Moshe Sternberg says, he said, when it's appropriate to avoid, it should be avoided, to say Babi Shita matona, because it's a michshol. Why is it a michshol? You're putting a stumbling block. Kisha'oz, imena mishalem, oivre bi'isr neder ha'chomer. So better to say kishayitein skumploini, not babu shayitein, or bli neder. That's really the safest way. Babu shayitein bli neder. So then you get out of any problem. That should really be the appropriate way. Not to say a loshen wet, which is a committed type of a loshen. I mentioned that I mentioned, even if you had good intentions at the time, you could either forget and so on and so forth. So the best thing is always, you know, is to say bli neder, which is a good practice just in general as well. Another thing is also, interesting thing is Bli Neder. You know, somebody asks you about something, are you going to do it? And you say Bli Neder. The Sholem Shadron used to say, every Bli Neder is a ligand, is a lie, he says, because you don't want to do it. He said, Bli Neder, I'll do it, he said. So this is, Mitamonzuk to Bli Neder. So here goes further. Let's see, right there, Yizorim Mimichshel Hanedorim. Interesting. He's not saying, right, be careful, right? Be careful from violating an Eder. Be careful from Mimichshel, from a stumbling block of an Eder. So he says, Kavanosa, Afila Eina Oivroid, even if you did not violate an Eder, but if you put yourself in a position that's going to bring you to violate, that's what the Rosh is saying, be careful, she is on Mimichshel. Don't put yourself in situations where you might, where you may become to violate an Eder. And that is, let's say a person makes a vow, makes a pledge. Right, and he's ready to honor it. All of a sudden, you know, he finds a good deal on a car. So he decides to buy the car, then realizes he doesn't have any money, so now he can't pay the pledge. So the idea is he put himself into a position that he's going to now to maybe violate the neder. So that's what the Rosh is saying, be careful not to put yourself in a place that's called a mikshel, putting yourself in a situation where you is going to lead to violating the neder. That's called a mikshel. That's what he says in the next line in the middle. V'zeu shehoisif, also be careful, moinoes habriyas, be careful, right, from hurting people, whether in the money area or with words. The chiddush, what the Rosh is really saying, shebezeh yizoya, the Rosh is saying not only to be careful, lo yirak moino agufe. The Rosh is saying, you should be careful also from a mikshul in the area of money or in the area of dvarim, which means, I'm not just talking to you, says the Rosh, that you shouldn't cheat a person. That's pushing. I'm talking to you not to put yourself in a position that may lead to cheating. For example, a person keeps company with other ganovim. Keep company with people without dishonest. What's going to happen is that as you keep company with dishonest people, this may lead you also to do the same thing. That's what he means. When he tells you to be careful, oinoas habriyas, he means from the michshul of oinoas habriyas. Don't put yourself in a situation that will cause you even later. Ela memichshul sha'olu lehevia lekach. He's speaking, he keeps company with people who are lulim lehevia lehoinos, who are apt, right? Who are going to bring him to cheat. Don't keep company with such people. The Rosh is therefore emphasizing, it's not enough that a person doesn't actually cheat someone, but don't even put yourself in a situation that may lead you to cheat, or putting you at risk that you're going to cheat, from the michshul. Prevent yourself from falling into a michshul of doing such situations. That is the lotion, to be careful from the michshul of the thing. Now, also, Reb Chaim Kanievsky wrote a pirish on the Orchis Chaim, and it's called Asom Orchoisov. And he says over here, because the Rosh said, be careful of michshul hanadorim. He doesn't say, be careful of violating the actual neder, which is something he says later. Here he talks about, be careful about michshul hanadorim. In other words, because there are certain times where there's a mitzvah to make a neder. Otherwise, in generally speaking, one should always avoid making a neder. Why? Because there was a risk in case something happens, and you're not going to fulfill that. It's very serious to violate a neder. But we find there's a mitzvah, as a matter of fact, to make a neder where a person needs chizuk in an area of his Yiddishkeit. For example, a person that has a weakness, let's say, he doesn't get up for davening. You're allowed to make a neder if that neder is going to encourage you, you know what, that I'm going to come to davening every day or every Monday and Thursday, whatever the situation is. He needs that chizuk, he needs that encouragement to make a neder in order to be mechazik his Yiddishkeit. For example, a person, let's say, is very weak in going to a shir. So he says to himself, if I make a neder, if I'll go to a shir every day, then I'll keep it. It's a mitzvah to do that. Minayin shenishboim lekayim es ha-mitzvah, so says the Gemara in the Dorim Dav Zayim, because the Ramelo said, Nishbati v'akayeimo lishmor, right? Mishpatei tzidkecho. The Ramelo said, Nishbati v'akayeimo. So if there's an area where you're allowed to make a neder, now you have to be careful not to michshul hanadorim. Because you made a neder, be careful not to default. That's the idea, says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, the Loshen Hashiyazor Shalei Koshel Boven Adorim. In those cases where there's a mitzvah to make a neder, so I'm not telling you not to make a neder. Because there are certain areas, right, where you're allowed to make a neder. But now that you made the neder, and you're allowed to make the neder, now you have to be careful not to fall into the trap of michshul. That neder that you made shouldn't become a michshul stumbling block, because you may default. So that's the idea. Yizor shlo yikoshel be'oven edorim. I want to mention one other thing here, which in fact is what the Alter von Kelner, Belga Pian, once mentioned in the name. Interesting thing that the Rosh mixes here two things. He talks about Michshel HaNedarim. A person who violates Nedarim, that's Ben Odom L'Mokoy. That's between him and Hashem. Immediately when he talks about cheating or hurting, right, your fellow man, or you know as Habriyos, whether it's in the area of Momen, or hurting him, right, with words, that's Ben Odom L'Chaveroy. So why is it? So why is it that the Rosh here mixes the two things together? Nedarim, why is he lumped together, Nedarim together with the Inyonim, which is Odom L'Mokim with Odom L'Chaveroy? So the Altav Kelm says, and he says as follows, L'lamdeinu d'shnei chelka ha-mitzah salolo dover echo. You have to realize, the mitzah that Ben Odom L'Mokim and Odom L'Chaveroy, it's one package. There are certain people, unfortunately, we see they're very, very frum. They go to the mikveh every day, right? And they will dress very frum, and yet when they go out in the world, Ben Odom L'Chaveroy, it's not the same person. And then you have the other way too. You have people, he's a mensch on the street, but he's not that frum, not really. Shabbos is not that important to him. Kosher is not important. So the answer is, it's one package. There's no two parts of Torah. Torah is not divided between either Odom L'Mokim, Odom L'Chver. As a matter of fact, you have to have both. A person wants to be frum. If a person decides he's going to be weak in one area, if he makes a decision, then he's going to be weak in the other area too. As a matter of fact, Chazal say that even when it comes to being makir toive, it says if somebody denies, when somebody does you a favor, right, you owe him a debt of gratitude. If you're a thankless person, right? So Chazal say it doesn't stop there. You're not going to thank Hashem either. In other words, you have to be a thankful person. And you have to be a thankful person, not just say, okay, I'm going to thank Hashem, I don't care what people. No. If you're not going to show respect, you're not going to show kovod to people, and you're not going to feel a koras atoiv to your fellow person who does you a favor, the end is going to be that you're also going to deny Kodesh Baruch Hu. So it's an interesting thing. You know, in Nishmas, I don't know if you ever noticed, it says Hamahulo. There's two versions, either Bechol HaTishbochos or Hamahulo Beroiv HaTishbochos. Hamahulo Hashem is praised. There's one version, Hamahulo Beroiv HaTishbochos. Let's translate that. What does it mean? Hashem is praised in most praises. What do you mean most? Not all? What do you mean Hashem is all Beroiv HaTishbochos? Is there an area that Hashem is not praised? This area I'm not praising Hashem? You can't say that. Hashem is praised in every area. Everything Hashem does, He deserves praise. What do you mean Hamahulo? What kind of nusach is this? Hamahulo Beroiv HaTishbochos. Hamahulo HaTishbochos. Melech Mahulo Batish Bochus. We don't say Melech Mahulo, only most cases Hashem is praised. What do you mean Hamahulo Beroiv Hatish Bochus? That is said from Beis Brisk. What it means is, Hashem says, the truth is, all the gratitude comes from me. But you know what? I leave over, thank people as well. Don't give me all the praise. In other words, when people do you a favor, it's all B'nai Shemayim. I mean, who gave the person the ability, right, or the wherewithal to do you a favor? Who gave it? It all comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because Baruch Hu says, you know what? I don't want all the praise. I'm leaving over some of the praise. Thank people, society, that are doing you favors. Why? Because you're not going to thank them at the end. You're not going to thank me either. So then Hashem says, all I'm asking is most of the praise. But a chelik, I'm leaving over, thank human beings as well. Because if you're not going to feel gratitude to human beings, the end is you're not going to feel gratitude to me either. So I'm a hul b'rayv at Hishbachis. Hashem himself says, I'm a shire. I'm leaving over room. I'm leaving my room. Thank other people as well. Don't give me all the thanks. Thank also other people who are involved in your life and doing you favors, that you should owe them also a debt of gratitude. So the interesting thing is, that's why, you know, when the Gemara tells us, it says, Shnei Luchas Avonim. So the Gemara says, actually it's a Medrash Tanchum and Pasha Zekev, it says, Shnei Psoluchu Shnei Luchas, it's without a Vov. Luchas. We read it Luchas, plural. Luchas. The Gemara says, why? Shloyiu, it says, Gedoilim Zemezer. One side, one stone should not be higher than the other. Elishneim Shovim. They should be equal. The two Luchas should be equal. Therefore it says, Luchas. One shouldn't be greater than the other. It should appear like one. What is the Kavanas Advarim? The Kavanas Advarim is, because you know the Luchas, one side, starting from Menoichi, five on one side is basically Ben Odom L'Mokim, between me and Hashem. Right? Where it says, don't swear falsely, believe in Hashem, don't make any idols, and so on. The second half of the Lucha is Kabbal Svichov Vesemecho. It talks about Loi Signov, it talks about Loi Sirsoch, and all the other things. Right? So that's talking about Ben Odom L'Chaveroi. That the Torah says they should be even. One shouldn't be bigger than the other. That a person shouldn't, right, attribute more cheshivas to one side than the other side. So you, right, echad godel zemizeh. One side shouldn't be greater than the other side. And as we pointed out, because if a person, once you begin to pick and choose, then there's no security for any part of the Torah. Once you allow yourself, right, to decide, I'm going to cut here, I'm going to cut here. Today I'm going to cut over here. Tomorrow I'm going to be cutting over there. It's one package, it's one Torah, and therefore we have no, we don't have the ability or the authority to be able to change anything. Let's take a look at Rabbi Zahir on the sheet here. We'll see something fascinating material that we have here. The first part is from a Shalz Yeshua, Dvar Yeshua. Dvar Yeshua is a Bishir Ehrenberg. He was a Belzer Chusid, was a Chassidic Shiit, and he was a Rav in Tel Aviv, going back like 50 years ago or so. He was a tremendous Paisik. As a matter of fact, some big Talmud Chacham referred to him as a canon. And the Belzer Rebbe, Rav Arla, Friedrich Belzeruv, was very much respectful for him. And whenever there was a Shaila, he would say, you should ask, he says, Rabbi Shimon Achim Ehrenberg, who wrote many Chalokim, Shas HaTshuvah Dvar Yeshua. So the Shaila that was asked to him, you know, because I'm bringing it here, this interesting Shaila, because we just learned now, the Yochas Chaim, to be careful, right? To be careful, Michshel Nadarim. If you're making pledges, be careful about pledges. In other words, you should say, really, Bli Neder, and be careful not to default on pledges. The question was, there is practices in some shuls, when they make appeals, so the Gaboyim want to be able to raise the bids, so they have such, say, they assign such dummy bidders, which have bidders bidding higher numbers. The intention is not that they're going to pay for it, so they get the other people who are bidding against to have to outbid, and therefore to push up and bring up the price of the aliyah, whatever you're selling, to a higher. So there's certain people which are set up ahead of time to open pledges, large pledges, not because the intention is that they're going to play it, but for the person who's going to have to outbid him, right, thinking this is a legitimate bidder. So the question was, is this practice acceptable? Because the bidder who's bidding against him thinks that this person is a legitimate bidder. That's why I'm outbidding him. And meanwhile, he was only put up like as a decoy, you know, to be able to have the bids go higher. So you see over here, it's a lengthy shuva. I just took out two, three small paragraphs of that. Let's take a look. He writes that, but this shuva was to Reb Cheskel Shrager Ruben Halberstam, the Chechen of Aruv. You know, you find him in all this farm. He asks shilas. You know, Moshe is a Gris Moshe. You find a lot of shilas. And so here we have here. Kabalta Lenoche, he says, Lenoche, and he says, Hakushe, he said, the kasha that you asked, Bedovar Hanoyeg Eitzel Orche Magvios. There's a minig, is a custom by those, right, by those who conduct appeals. There's a practice, he says. They're making appeals, right? For worthy organizations. We're talking about legitimate, worthy organizations. So they announced Barabim the Nidova. They say, so-and-so gave such and such. He never gave it. But they announce a name, so other people here. You start up, you know, it's good to start an appeal with a large bid. So they say, so-and-so gets $10,000. So now, so the other person will be tempted maybe to give the same or to match the funds. So they announce, Barabim Nedova, he says, Hanoisnim, Kamakol Echot Poisik, how much each one is giving, Bechdei, Shacheim Yishmu V'yasu Kamoisam. So others who will hear it, right, will do the same thing, will match the same donation. Fine. But the yesh, but you have unethical ways. You have manahale magvios. You have those people, right, who conduct these appeals. Shoyis and biyorma, that they do it deceitful, or in a cunning way. What do? Umamidim echad shnayim atzibur. They appoint one or two people from the congregation. Hasorim mashmosom, that will listen to them. Shiukayfsim roish, that they should jump ahead, right, and announce a pledge. Biyachayv uatzim on bishum godel. And they're going to announce a pledge as if they are committing themselves to a large amount, much more than they could afford. Right? But quietly behind the scenes, they're not intention. They should not. Don't expect them to give it. They're only announcing these large amounts, so other people should do the same. Is it appropriate to do that? So he says, the ikar mina gerua zeh, he says, this mina gerua. He said, this is a bad minuk. Shenahagu orche hamagbiois, that he says, people conduct appeals. Loi chodosh, I want you to know, he says, this negative practice is nothing new. Ukvar hisri olav hamasho. Go back 4 or 5 centuries. The Marsha already, b'chidush ha'godos, he says, Masech Tesukid Abchavtes, the Marsha makes a comment, the Isa Hosom. The Gemara says a very, very serious statement. The Gemara says there's 4 things that could cause a person to lose his fortune. People sometimes wonder, how come I lost my fortune? So the Gemara says, Dalet Dvorim, there could be other things as well, but the Gemara mentions Dalet Dvorim, Nechse Balabatim Nimsorim, that the Nechosim, which means the property and the assets of Balabatim Nimsorim, they are given over, means they go further. The Echoman, and one of them, Al Shepoiskim Tzedokah Barabim Venam Noisnim, means that they announce pledges in public and they don't give it. Now, simple meaning it means is they simply means they're violating an eder. That's the simple meaning. They're violating an eder. They pledge Barabim, they pledge in public, but if they're violating an eder, then why does it say Barabim? They're doing it Barabim. What about if you made a vow right in private that you're not giving? It's also it's not worse making pledging Barabim than making an eder between you and yourself. So the Masha says, look what he says, V'oiske Sadoki Barabim, you know what it means, those people who pledge Barabim, it means Hanishbalabatim Manhige Hakilo. This is what Masha is saying. That the Balabatim, those who lead the congregation, Poiskin Sadoki Maruba, they announce in Kula. They announce a large pledge, but they don't give all of it. Sha'imrim, because they say, we never meant the large pledge in reality. Shlohoyadatim Lakach El Bishulachirim. We only made the large pledge because we want to encourage others to give. Shigivin Azazach, in the time of the Mashor. El Bishulachirim Shivtum the Dovish Karoi. Harei Mefurish, so says here the Dvar Yeshua. So what do you see? You see Dato Shalamarsho, the Gam Kahai Gavne Isur Chomer Hu Even Nenosh Molot. We see you could be Nenosh, you could lose your fortune. So he says it's an appropriate, interesting thing. That this is his opinion. Just another 2 halachas, we're talking about the Michshul of Nedarim. What happens, you know, a Neder basically is when a person really, a real serious Neder is when you say Balpeh. Like Tzedakah happens to be also Machshova. What happens if a person, let's say, writes, I want to give tzedakah. So he brings that over here from the Shas Chuvas Be'er Moshe, Chilik Beisim Meches, that Nodar B'Ksav Loses Tzedakah Chayv Loses, even if you never said it by mouth. But if you did it in writing, you commit yourself in writing, Al Kanim Kosev Check L'Tzedakah Chayv B'Nesinosoy. In other words, even if you didn't give it over, you write a check, but you didn't give it over yet. So he said, listen, I stopped the prayer not to give it. I just wrote the check. I didn't give it yet. But writing the check is like it's a pledge b'ksav. And a pledge b'ksav is also considered to be. So it says you have to go to Bishoyl, you have to go to a Chocham to revoke that neder, to nullify it, l'mafayl. It could be matter neder. It could be a shaylah. What about if a person in a dream, you dreamt that you made a pledge, you're going to give $100 to tzedakah. Is a dream meaningful? Does a dream mean anything? Hivtiach tzedakah b'choloim, lo yivatlena. Don't just dismiss it. Rather go to a rov, right, go to a bezin, that they should revoke it. Otherwise, it could be a shaila, because it's a question in the poskim that if you make a pledge in a dream, maybe you have a chiyuv to give it also. So you see, it's not so simple. When you're dealing with nedarim and pledges, that many, many different ways, but you may be committed. And therefore, you have to take it seriously. Now, we saw here that the Rosh told us about, very important, the Rosh told us to be careful about oinoah. Oinoah is momen and oinoah is devarim. Okay, you can't get better than the Sefer Chassidim, of course. Again, one of the early Rishonim. Look at this following story. It's a frightening story. This is Sefer Chassidim. You can't go more authoritative than Sefer Chassidim. It's in Tof Resh Samach Aleph. That's the Sefer Chassidim, this particular Sif. Maisa Bishechot. Listen to this Maisa. It was a Maisa Bishechot Choyla Bonum Ubonus, who had sons and daughters. For some reason, they died after the Chassana. Sons and daughters, they died after they got married, they died. So this person went to a chocham and he poured his heart out. He poured his heart, look what's happening. He said he's marrying off sons and daughters, they get married and they die. Omaloi, and the person is saying to the Rav, he's saying to the chocham, Ma'arifa goy achas hoyli. I had a business. Ma'arifa is a lotion we find in the poskim. I had sort of like a business or a company. We are doing business with a goy, right? Umes ha goy, Right? Umes ha-goy ha-marif e-shali. So now he says, the goy died. V'achgach mesu bona b'noisai. So the goy died, right? And after the goy died, he says, that's when he began losing his children. It seems to, very, very peculiar. It's a very, very queer situation, he says. I have a business, with, I'm doing business with a goy. The goy dies, and once the goy dies, he says he's losing his children. After they got married. What does it mean after they got married? You know what it means after they got married? So they got married, so let's say, so his son dies, you know where the money falls? To the daughter-in-law. Daughter-in-law is not his blood relative, and there's no einiklich. So all his money ended up in somebody else's. And so this is what happened, he said. And the money's ended up either by the sons-in-law or by the daughters-in-law. Because he lost either his daughters and his sons. And he's speaking after the Chochem, he said, look, what's happening over here? The reason it ended up by the daughter-in-laws or by the son-in-laws because they didn't have children. They died before they had children. They didn't have children. So he said, it's a very, very queer question. He said, if they would have at least died before they got married, then the money would have remained by me. But now that they died after they got married, so now the money went to the spouse. And the spouse is not related to me. It's either my daughter-in-law or my son-in-law. It's not really related to me. So he said, and he also said, so what happened? The goy dies, he loses his sons, he loses his daughters, he loses his money. What happened? Maybe the money that you were earning, maybe it was dishonest. So he says, I never did anything bad to any person. It's a goy, he says. It's a goy. And being a goy, so that goy used to cheat him. It's a goy. The only person I ever cheated was this goy. But right? Harei kishemes. Listen what happened. Harei kishemes. Malochai higid loy. What happened is, when the goy died, so now comes a malach, v'tzoak al zeh. What happened is the malach came and told the goy. It's a fascinating. The malach came and told the goy after he died and said, you know what? During your lifetime, your partner, Yeshua, cheated you. So the goy started to scream out his neshom, his soul. Started to scream out, HaKadosh Baruch Hu oise mishpot la'ashukim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does judgment to those who are robbed. Whether you're robbing a Jew, whether you're robbing a goy, it doesn't make a difference. But it's a Jew or Gentile. Lachain lo yignoiv odom, says the Sefer Chassidim, you should never steal and rob lo le Yehudi v'lo le goy. Shlo yischal Hashem shemay lo yodah, not to do achil Hashem. So what happened is that when the goy died, so now he found out and he began to scream. Look what happened. So Kadosh Baruch Hu took up for the cause of the goy and took away that person's money, and he lost his children, lost his money. This is what Sefer Chassidim says. We talk about not to cheat people. Doesn't make a difference whether a Jewish person or whether it's a goy. So I want you to move over. See number 4 in the bottom, but move to the left side. Look to the left side in the bottom. It says, Sheiris Yisrael Yasu Avel. It's a posik. Jewish people should not do something that's avel, that's evil. Rabbi Moshe Mikutzi Kosev. Rabbi Moshe Mikutzi is one of the Rishonim who wrote the Sefer Smag. Sefer Smak, Sefer Mitzvahs, Cotton, Smak. He wrote a Sefer Mitzvahs like the Rambam, Tage Mitzvahs. Right? So Moshe Mikutzi is one of the Rishonim. So Moshe Mikutzi of Kutzi, he writes, Ani Dorashti Legolius Yisroel. I already darshaned, he says. I gave speeches. Ki Amishakrim Legoyim Vegoyim Lohem, those who lie, right, to Gentiles. And he robbed the Gentiles, Hem Bechla Machal Alei Hashem. Because they're also Machal Alei Hashem, Shegoyimim Sheyoyimro HaGoyim, because they cause that the Goyim will say, Ein Torah L'Yisrael. These Jewish people don't have a Torah. Look what they're doing. They're cheating us. With none of the sacred service, Kol Machal Shem Shemayim, if you cause Chil Hashem, he says, by defrauding a Goy, Kol Machal Shem Shemayim B'Seser, yeah, you're doing it in hiding, you're doing it stealthily, defraud me of a Goy, because Baruch will take up, he says, in public, he says, he'll punish you. Echad Shoigiv, Echad Mezer, Chil Hashem. Chil Hashem is so serious that even show you have to be very careful, go extra careful, not to do Chil Hashem. And with Perikamet Kedushin Omer, the Gemara says in the first Perik of Kedushin, you know, if a person, let's say, has half mitzvahs and half aveiris, so it's half and half, right? So Kadosh Baruch Hu gives them the benefit of the doubt. If they count all your aveiris, right, and they count all your mitzvahs, that's half and half on the scale. But if in the half of Averis, this Chilul Hashem, desecrating Hashem's name, that tips the scale automatically. That tips the scale automatically to the side of indictment. Normally, if it's half and half, it's half and half. Kodesh Baruch Hu, just the opposite. Mate klapa chesed. Kodesh Baruch Hu tips the scale on your favor. But if in the half of the Averis, there's an Aver of Chil Hashem, it tips the scale automatically. That's what the Gemara says. If the person's Averis and his mitzvahs were half and half, the Chil Hashem b'chlal machriya kulam. Just tips the scale. And there's a deceptive bovikame. People don't know that. Chomur gezel hanochri megezel yisoil. It's even more serious. He says to rob a goy from the Eve, got the Chil Hashem factor. It's the Chil Hashem factor. So he says this halacha im toys goy muteres or esura. I'm not going to go. Now what happens if a goy makes a mistake? So mikra din, many poiskim say that if the goy made a mistake, right, then he gave you extra change. So mikra din is muter. But Mesakim Ramoshi Ravkis Balbera goy Ramoshi Ravkis, actually Ramoshi Rivkis is named after his mother Rivke. Ramoshi Rivke. Ramoshi Rivkis was the Rebbe of the Vilna goy. And he's the Machaber of the Be'er Hagoyla. You know, when up on the Gemara, you see this Be'er Hagoyla, where he makes cross references to look, right, to look in various places that have a connection to what the Gemara is. So the Moshe Rifkes, look what he writes. Im hichzer aveda lakum, if you return an aveda, a lost object that belonged to a goy, you know it belonged to a goy, if you return it, the kaddish is Hashem, because you want to make a kiddush Hashem, kidei shefararos Yisrael, that they should praise, that the goy should praise Yidden, the yedu shem balamuna, and the goy would know that Jews are honest, hareze mishubach. He says, this person is praiseworthy. Go to the next paragraph. Mamshu v'koysef. The Beragoyla writes further. V'ani koysef zoyz. This you have to review over and over again. Many, many times. Look at these next few lines. Anybody who's in business has to remember that. V'ani koysef zoyz l'doyre. Says Rav Moshe Rifkis. Remember, the Rebbe of the Goyim. I'm writing this, he says, for future generations. Shara'isi rabim. I saw many people. Godlu v'hashiru. That they became rich. Because he cheated Gentiles. That's how they became rich. The end of the day, they were not matzliach. The yardu nechseim letimuin, and their fortune just went down the drain. On the other hand, in contrast, I saw many who were mekadishim shemayim, rabim ashekitchu Hashem, v'echziru teuyesakim, and they returned when the goy made a mistake. Godlu, he said, they prospered, heshiru, hetzlichu, v'enichu yisrom l'aleim. They're able to leave large yerushas, he says, for their children, and that's a very, very, very interesting thing and very important to realize. I want to mention, look over here. On number 4, look at it on the right side, from Rebbe Mendel Marinimus. And this is what the Bnei Soscha brings it down. The reason we know about this thing that Rebbe Mendel Marinimus said, because the Bnei Soscha brings down, Bnei Soscha wrote a sefer, it's called Agra de Pirke, which means the study, like the koil is called here, this koil is called Agra de Pirke, which is based on a Gemara, which makes that phrase. So the Bnei Soscha wrote a sefer, and it brings down from Rebbe Mendel of Rimanif. Now look what he says. Omer Rebbe Mendel Marinimus. Why is it we see so many children that when they were young they were so promising, it appeared they're going to become Talmidei Chachamim, they're going to become, you know, people who are going to be respected, they can make a contribution to the community. What happened when they grew up? They did not materialize. You see children as they were growing up, it seemed that so much promise and so much koyach was put into their chinuch. So what happened? Where did they go wrong? So Reb Mendel Merimenev says, that which we see harbe pomim many times, shelodim bekatnusam. You see young children, while they're young, shoygdim b'limunat Torah, they are learning with hasmode, umespalim bekavone. And you see that the children are davening with kavone. The achikach, and yet, kishegideilim, when they grow up, mishapchim b'midos gruois. You see that they are terrible midos. What happened? He gave him such a good chinuch. And they were learning, and they were davening. Umevatlim Torah tfile. Not only that, uporkum alamitzis, they throw it all away. They throw the whole Torah away. Where did that come from? After all, you know, Torah, when you learn at a young age, that's pure Torah. Because you're before Bar Mitzvah, you have no chait. Torah that is pure without a chait. So what happened to it? Why did it dissipate? Why did it evaporate? That is hevel that comes out of the mouth, which is no chait, it's pure. Is appropriately would expect that this Torah would remain, but you see for Oymus even stronger. So how can it turn around the other way? Sibis Hadovar said, "Remember, Merimadim." Now the Bnei Soscha is quoting this. Sibis Hadovar Nausub Avisayim. It has to do with the parents. It has to do with the parents. The children were learning. The children were davening. No, so what happened? It has to do with the parents. How does that have to do with the parents? Because the food that the parents are feeding the children is from dishonest money. You hear what he's saying? Parents, right? They're feeding pure kosher, by the way. The best heksher. The food has the best heksher. How they buy the food? They bought the food from dishonest money. So the food that is being eaten by the children, they are consuming food that came from a dishonest source. That does them in. It's unbelievable. Mind-boggling thing. He says, it's from business that was not honest. So they became fattened up with Isser. That created taivus royes, terrible desires, umidas gruas, terrible midois. He says, mizevikoif, oh, very interesting. You know by the bird, when you bring the birds, eskribonos, when you bring a bird as a carbon, a bird can be either a chatas bird or an oil bird. Right, the oil bird is totally consumed. The chatas, right, is eaten. But there's one portion that is not sacrificed. The zefik. The zefik is the crop. That's where the food basically is stored. The zefik of the oif is thrown away. The hishlich oisa. He throws it away. Why is the crop, right? Why the crop, the food storage, why is that not offered as a carbon? You know why? Because birds eat for gezel. They eat, they fly all over, and they steal seeds from other people's property. That cannot go on the mizbeah. That cannot go as a carbon. Look at that. The Raya Ludover says, Mizefik hoif. Zefik is, that's the crop of the bird. This is not sacrificed on the mizbeah. Hey, yois ben henem la gezel, because the bird, right? The bird steals, basically. Goes and flies all over the place and eats whatever it can get. That's not something that goes up to Shemayim. Even though the bird was not commanded, the bird doesn't have a mitzvah, the bird doesn't have an iser, yogamvin and ishgamvin, the bird is not the bachiyuvah. Hagam shon itzave, the bird was not commanded. But kashbrochu is soyne gezel v'chomos, whether you're commanded or not. The bird was not commanded. But the fact is, it comes from a non-kosher source. If it comes from a non-kosher source, this cannot be. Yeah. So this is a very, very fascinating thing. We will conclude, just to tell him, turn the sheet on the side, look at number 6. Number 6. And this is okay. This is you'll take a look here. Maise bo lemechot. There was a maise by a person shechotav machaveroi b'Rosh Hashanah marza. A person who took somebody else's marza on Rosh Hashanah, and the person was, they didn't tell him that he's taking it, and it comes out that he stole somebody's marza. He stole somebody's marza on Rosh Hashanah, right? This parliament toichoi, hoichichoi zokenechot. So it was a zokin who noticed it. It was a zokin who noticed, an elderly person noticed him, and he said, "There's a posuk who beitzei aberach, somebody who steals and makes a bracha niyetz Hashem. It angers Hakadosh Baruch Hu, because Baruch Hu doesn't want a bracha from a right from a source, from a dishonest source. Ma shove eifo tefiloscho. What do you think? What can your tefillah? What you're davening? What value can your davening have? Habo mitoch marzer gozel." Oh, maloi. So the person hearing that, upon hearing it, he says, "Imkain mo es achshus. What should I do now?" He says, "Tevakish me bala marzer shiyachelocha sefer. Ask him now, reshus permission to borrow it and daven over again." He said, "For this balushenis, kila heavy yiduelocha shetfiloscha reshoyne leyolselocha." You heard tefillah, the first one didn't go. It was a stolen marzer. So this gives us a little bit of an idea. When the Rosh tells us again, he's already to be careful. He says, "For my noyes abrius, hey b'mamein, hey b'dvarim." Be careful. And we see all the terrible, terrible consequences regarding such situations. So, because sir, so, Ms. Hashem, just want to make an announcement. Next week I'll be out of town, actually, be speaking somewhere. And so one more Monday. We'll be off. Okay,